Hello, and welcome to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future, the live local show, that means we're right here in Sacramento, that's all about the issues of aging, all about frailty, all about staying independent and staying at home, all about making wise decisions regarding an elder loved one. Somebody you care about, somebody you care for, somebody that you might care for someday. Welcome to the show. My name is Bob Scrivano, your host here for 18 years or 19, I don't know. It's been a long time right here on Assets and Aging, talking about all of these things for so many years, I can't begin to tell you. I wish you could sit in my office sometimes and talk to the people and listen to the people that come through and how confused they are. You know, I'll get to all the disclaimers in a minute. But, you know, I had somebody come in my office the other day. I had a workshop last week. Actually, I think maybe it was at the workshop. I can't remember where. And said they had gone to this attorney. And it's a very well-known attorney here in town. And the attorney said, oh, I think all that Medi-Cal eligibility stuff is a scam. Now, first of all, following the rules and doing Medi-Cal is not a scam. There are rules. There are federal rules. There are state rules. And if you follow them, it's a health care that's available to people who are in nursing homes. Now, here's my real question. For those people that have followed this guy's advice for all of these years, how many millions of dollars has he cost people because he thinks helping people protect their houses and protect their money and protect all of that kind of stuff is a scam? The person I talked to's words, not mine. I don't have the answer for you because I don't know what the number is, but I'll tell you what, it's a lot. For the 25 to 30 years I've been doing this, this show has been dedicated to making sure that people don't lose what they've worked a lifetime for. And I find it appalling that someone who should know better would be out there telling people that if you protect your house and if you protect what your loved ones and if you protect what you work a lifetime for, that that's somehow a scam. If you use advantage of the rules and regulations that were written to protect what middle-class people own. So my question is how many millions of dollars has this cost families because of that kind of advice? And as long as I'm able to do this show, I'm going to keep telling people that you don't have to lose everything. You don't have to become impoverished. You don't have to be poor. You don't have to do any of these things if you, at the end of your life or a loved one, wind up in a nursing home. I'm Bob Scrivano, your host. Remember, I'm not an attorney. I don't practice law. I don't give legal advice. Everything we talk about here is my opinion only, and it should not be taken as a form of legal, financial, or tax advice. I have a California insurance license, a legal document assistant license allowing me to prepare legal documents at your direction, recorded and registered bond recorded in Sacramento County. What else? I'm not securities licensed. I don't want to be. I can't tell you how many people walk into my office, folks. Never mind. I don't want to go there. And all the money that they've lost. Never mind. So I've got lots of stuff to talk about today. But I really do. But what I want to focus on, a couple other things I got to tell you. Don't forget, you can always reach me at my, see, this is a live show. I don't have a script. You can reach me at my office anytime, 800-999-8007. I know that's an 800 number, and if you're in Sacramento, you still call the 800 number, 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007. And you can call that number and get a hold of me. You can go to my website, assetsandaging.com. ASSETS and AND Aging, A-G-I-N-G, assetsandaging.com. You can go there and ask me a question. You can sign up for an upcoming workshop. I have workshops every month. We just had one last weekend. We had a great time. Everybody that was there said the same thing at the end. We've never been to anything like this in our life. My workshops are not like anything you've ever been to or heard or seen. When it comes to talking about long-term care, I don't work around the edges. We talk about the way things are in real life. You can listen to my podcasts every week on my website. Every Wednesday at noon, I do a live podcast. My podcast and radio shows, if you can't listen live, are archived on my webpage. So you can go and listen to my recent radio shows and my recent podcasts. There are archived there. You can ask me a question. You can sign up for a workshop. You can call me, and you can get the help you need. But if you've gone to someone who's told you that you have to lose everything and that you can't protect your house and you can't protect what you have, then you need to run screaming from them and get over and see me and begin the process of making sure that if someone in your family at the end of life needs care, you don't wind up losing anything. There's no reason to, ever. Okay, well, here's what I want to talk about a little bit. I've talked about this book before, and I'm going to talk about something in it again. It's the best book ever written on the issues of aging. Ever, period. There's no book second. It's so far ahead. It is a book called Being Mortal, B-E-I-N-G-M-O-R-T-A-L, Being Mortal. And it's written by a doctor, and his name is Atul, A-T-U-L, Gawande, G-A-W-A-N-D-E. Buy it. Read it. Give it to your children. Give it to your spouse. Give it to your parents. Give it to your loved ones. Make them read it. It will begin to open your eyes to the reality of aging and dying. It's easy to read. It's not a technical book. It's a personal book about Dr. Gawande's struggle. By the way, Dr. Gawande is married to a doctor, and both his parents are doctors. And it was how unprepared he was to deal with the realities of aging when his own father began to become mortal. It's an easy read. It's not a technical book. It's not that kind of a book. I want to read you something from here today. I'm reading this again for the third time. I'm actually reading the book again for the third time because that's how important I think that this book is. I mean, unbelievably important. So I want to read you something from this book. It's actually on page 22. If you have a copy of it, you can read along with me. And I want to read this to you, and I want you to listen to this. When I start a workshop, or any, and by the way, I'll come and speak to your group or organization anytime for free. Anytime. All you have to do is call me, and we'll arrange a time. And if you're not too far away, like Eureka or something, I'll come and speak to your group or organization for free. So I start out every group or organization by asking this question. And I'll ask it to you. How many of you now know or have ever known anybody in a nursing home? Raise your hand. If you're driving down a road, don't raise your hand. How many of you now know or have ever known anybody in assisted living? Raise your hand. How many of you now know or have ever known anybody who needed care at home? Raise your hand. All of you have raised your hands. All of you have known somebody that at the end of life spent time receiving care in some way, shape, or form. In some cases, for years and years and years and years and years. You have all done that. I've done that. With that in mind, I want to read you something. And I want you to think about it as I'm reading it to you. Because I'm going to read it without stopping. It's not very long. It's only about three sentences. And again, I'm reading from the book Being Mortal by Dr. Atul Gawande. These are not my words. There remains one problem with this way of living. Our reverence for independence takes no account of the reality of what happens in life. Sooner or later, independence will become impossible. Serious illness or infirmity will strike. It is as inevitable as sunset. If independence is what we live for, what do we do when it can no longer be sustained? I want to read it to you one more time, and I want you to hear the words. There remains one problem with this way of living. Our reverence for independence takes no account of the reality of what happens in life. Sooner or later, independence will become impossible. Serious illness or infirmity will strike. It is as inevitable as sunset. If independence is what we live for, what do we do when it can no longer be sustained? Are you listening to the statement he's making and the question that he's asking? Everybody, me included, wants to be independent. We want to be independent for as long as possible. We want to drive. We want to live alone. We want to cook our own food. We want to eat our own food. We want to be able to go to the movies. We want to be able to do whatever it is we want to do. We want to be able to be independent as long as possible. If I go to Morton's for a nice steak, by the way, I love Morton's steaks. If I want to go to Morton's for a nice steak, I want to be able to cut my own steak. I want to be able to pick from the menu my own food. I want to be able to do those things. Everybody does. But as he said, all of us will lose independence. It's as inevitable as the sunset. So when that begins to happen to you or to those you love or to those you care about or to your friends or to whoever it is, as that begins to happen, what are you going to do about that? How many of you have ever had somebody that you had to take a driver's license away from? On a scale of 1 to 10, it was about a 12, wasn't it, difficult? Lots of us have had to do it. Many of you listening have had to do it. You've had to go do something you never, ever, ever in your wildest imagination thought you would ever have to do. And how easy for everybody was it talking to that other person that you were taking the driver's license away from and telling them that they couldn't drive anymore, they couldn't go to the grocery store anymore, they couldn't go to the restaurant anymore. They couldn't do any of that independently. They were going to have somebody do it. How many of you have ever had to take care of someone that you had to bathe, or that you had to deal with hygiene matters, or that you had to help get dressed, or in and out of bed? How many of you have had to deal with someone who was becoming less independent? How did you deal with it? How did you do? Did you do okay? Did it add stress to your life? Did it add stress to the other person's life? How did you do physically? Were you able to get that person in and out of the bathtub? Were you able to get them dressed? And then what happened when they decided they didn't like the clothes you picked? Or they didn't like the way you washed them? Or they didn't like the way you prepared the food that they were going to eat, or whatever it was. Have any of you ever had to do that? How much fun was it? How many of you are looking at your own life or the life of somebody you care about right now, and if you were being honest, you would say to yourself, I'm becoming less, I'm independent. There are things I can't do anymore. At one time, I used to always clean the gutters. I don't clean the gutters anymore. We have seamless gutters. We have, you know, leaf-free gutters, that kind of stuff. Why? Because it became unsafe, especially when I had wound up with two artificial knees. It became unsafe for me or my wife, because of our ages, to climb up on a ladder and clean out a gutter. How many of you lift heavy weights anymore? How many of you, when you make your bed, it's harder than it used to be to lift up the corner of that bed to put that sheet in there? It is for me. I don't know about for you. You can still do it, but don't kid yourself to believe that it's as easy as it used to be. How many of you that used to change your oil all the time yourself to save a buck can't do that anymore? How many of you have to cross your legs to tie your shoes or to put your shoes on while you're sitting down rather than being able to bend down and tie them or put them on? How many of you have to sit down to pull your pants on? Because you can't balance so well anymore on one foot while you put one foot in your pants and then the other foot in your pants. Now, expand that a little bit to not just yourself, but the people around you who you love. How many of you have trouble buttoning a blouse now or buttoning up a pair of pants or a shirt because your fingers don't function as well as they used to anymore? Everybody thinks when we talk about loss of independence, we're talking about big things like I'm going to be in a wheelchair. I'm just talking about the normal activities of daily living. So as you become less independent, how are you going to deal with it in your own life? And if it's somebody that you love that's becoming less independent, how are you dealing with it in their life? I don't have the answer for you. Sometimes I don't have the answer for me. The answer for everybody is different. It's different for you, different for me, different for your brother, your sister, your Aunt Tilly, your mom, your dad, your grammy, your grampy, whoever it is, it's different. It has to be approached in different ways. I remember when I was getting my knees replaced. Before I had the surgery, we had to go to the hospital and we had to go to this meeting. And they had a nurse there, and they talked about what was going to happen and what was coming and what would be going on and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. The normal stuff that we talk about. We talked about all that stuff. And as we talked about it, they kind of went around the room and said, okay, you know, after the surgery, who's going to pick you up and who's going to pick you up and who's going to pick you up? And my wife was there, and she was going to be the one that took me home and all that kind of stuff from after the surgery. And there was an older gentleman there. I would say he was in his 70s, maybe older than that. And they came around to him, and he had come to the meeting in a taxi cab. And as we were sitting there, the nurse said, well, you know, after the surgery, who's going to come and get you? And he said, well, I'm going to take a cab home. And she said, well, I'm not so sure about that. And then there was another person there who lived in a two-story house, and the bedroom was upstairs, and the kitchen was downstairs. And their plan was, after they had the knee surgery, and they were older than I was, they were in their 70s also, and when they lived upstairs, and it was like, well, how are you going to get downstairs? You live alone? Yeah. Well, who's going to take care of you? Well, I'll be able to take care of myself. Well, how are you going to get up and down the stairs? How are you going to prepare food? How are you going to get down to answer the front door or get your mail? And nobody had any answers because they had never anticipated the issue of the fact that after they had their knees replaced, they were not going to be independent for some period of time. They were going to become totally dependent on someone else. Any of you that have had a knee replaced understand what I'm saying. Well, eventually when you have your knee replaced, you gain your independence back. You're able to now walk around. In fact, it's better than it was before in most cases. Well, what would happen if it didn't get better? If you just continue to decline? I have arthritis in my hands. I have arthritis in my body. That's why I had my knees redone. I don't know about you, but my fingers hurt sometimes. Do you think that arthritis is going to get better or worse? Do you think I'm going to be more or less likely to be able to open a jar of peanut butter? How many of you, it's a little harder now to turn the knob on a door or the steering wheel on a car? If we can't deal with 2 weeks of being loss of independence while having knees, what happens when our independence begins to go away to the point where we become dependent upon someone for maybe years? It's a really important question to ask yourself. It's a question that Dr. Gawande asks in his book. And in fact, it's a lot of the book is about that as he deals with his father, as his father loses independence. Now, remember, these are four doctors, he and his wife and his two parents, and none of them are prepared for that loss of independence and what's going to come. I cannot tell you how much I recommend this book to you. It's important that in your own life, in the life of your family, in the life of the person that you love, in the life of whoever it is, it's important that you ask the question, as I lose independence, or as that loved one loses independence, how are we going to deal with that? Most of the people I see in my office have never dealt with it. They're now dealing with it in a crisis. They're now dealing with it because something bad has happened, and all of a sudden they're dealing with it. And they're running around like chickens with their heads cut off because they don't know what to do. They don't know how to handle it. They've put it off, and they've put it off, and they've put it off, hoping that it's going to get better, that they're not going to have to deal with it until all of a sudden they're dealing with it in a crisis. All of a sudden, that person that had was losing their balance a little bit fell and broke their hip, and now they're dealing with a complete loss of independence by someone. All of a sudden, that person who was fine starts to have mini strokes, and their memory's not so good, and their cognitive ability's not so good. Or maybe they begin to develop a little bit of dementia, which is going to turn into a lot of dementia. But I had somebody in my office the other day, and we're talking, and I said, you know, they were describing their parent to me, that this person had some dementia, and I said, can the person walk? Yeah, I said, if they ever walked out of the door. Well, yeah, they've done that a couple, but we were able to find them. Do you understand the danger in that word and that concept? And that's been going on for some time, and they're just now willing to deal with it because they finally have, it's dawned on them, partly because of our discussion, that their parent is losing independence and they need to step in and protect that person. What's your plan as you lose independence? As he said, it's as certain as the sunset that we all are going to become less independent. Instead of thinking in terms of dementia or frailty or whatever, I think I'm going to adopt that concept, that I deal in what happens in helping people who are losing independence figure out how they're going to deal with it and how their families are going to deal with it. I think it's a great concept, and I'm going to steal it from Dr. Gawande and talk in terms of loss of independence. That could be mental, it could be physical, it could be both. But how are you going to deal with it in your family, with your parent, with your spouse, with yourself? I'm going to ask some of you a question and answer honestly. How many of you now in your own life are losing independence to the point where you're scared sometimes of being alone, or of having your mom be alone, or your dad being alone. Do you understand that if you're afraid, you need to stop being afraid and take control of the situation and begin to do the things that you need to do to help that person, even if that person is yourself? You can start by calling me, 800-999-8007, 800-999-8007. Go to my website, assetsandaging.com, get a hold of me, call me, get in, and together, let's reason together and find the answers. They're knowable, they're discoverable, and you can implement them. Let's find the things that work in your life and your family as somebody you love begins to lose independence. We're going to take a little break. I'll be back in just a few minutes after the news. Stick around. Don't go away. Welcome back to Assets and Aging, Affording the Future. I'm your host, Bob Scrivano. Glad to have you with us. I hope you found the first half of the show interesting. I'm going to give you some actual real-life stuff now. Get a piece of paper and pencil out. Because I'm going to go through and tell you what the basic implements are of planning for loss of independence. The things you need to have in place so that when this happens to you or your family, that you can deal with it. I'm gonna go through all of it, and I'm gonna give you a list. And this isn't a complete list or an exhaustive list; it's a beginning list. You know, it's like if you're gonna build cabinets, you know for a fact you're gonna have to have a saw and a hammer and some nails or screws and maybe a drill. And along the way, things come up, and you may need to add some stuff because your cabinets are different than somebody else's cabinets. But I want to give you the basic tools. And let's go through them. And let's talk about them a little, remembering I'm not an attorney. I'm not giving you legal advice. This is my opinion only. It's an opinion based on 25, 30 years of experience. The first thing everybody needs to have are powers of attorney. If you're 18 or over, you should have powers of attorney. And there are two kinds, basically. There's more than two kinds. But for our discussion today, there are two kinds. One is, you hear people say all the time, well, what about a durable power of attorney? All durable means is it continues even if you become disabled. It used to be that powers of attorney ended if you became disabled or incompetent or incapacitated. Durable simply means they continue, even if you're incompetent or incapacitated. So one of the kinds of powers of attorney that you should have, everybody over 18 should have, I made my kids do one when they were 18, is a power of attorney for property or things or finance. That's who can take care of financial stuff for you. Now, when I do a power of attorney, it's 25 pages long because it has to include things about authority about everything. It can't just say, my agent is authorized to do everything. It has to include what your agent can do. Let's just use real estate. In my power of attorney, can the person that has my power of attorney, called the agent, okay, can they sell my house? If they needed to. Could they mortgage my house? Could they get the balance on my mortgage? Could they do a reverse mortgage if I needed one and couldn't do it? Could they pay my property taxes? Could they pay my homeowner's insurance? Could they file a claim for my homeowner's insurance if I needed to? Can they get information on the deed? Can they talk to the mortgage company? Can they lease the house? Can they rent the house? Can they hire a gardener to mow the lawn at my house? Can they put in a telephone at my house if I can't? Do you begin to understand all the things? I'm just talking about real estate. What about banking? Can they open a bank account? Can they close a bank account? Can they get into a safety deposit box? Can they deal with a mortgage through the bank? Can they do letters of credit? Can they do online banking? Can they order new checks? Can they renew CDs? Can they deal with money markets? And I can go on and on. That's just banking. And you can go on and on and on. Who is somebody authorized to sign contracts for you, to hire a caregiver, to sign a contract with a placement agency, or a nursing home, or an assisted living facility? Do you begin to understand what I'm talking about? The one document everybody over 18 should have, there's two, this is the first one, is a power of attorney for things. Again, I don't want to get too deep in the weeds here, but you need to get advice as to whether or not you need an immediate power of attorney or what's called a springing power of attorney. I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to go into the difference, but there's a difference. The second kind of power of attorney really isn't a power of attorney. In California, we call them advanced healthcare directives, but everybody calls them durable powers of attorney for healthcare. The healthcare directive is who makes medical decisions for you. And is it immediate? Do they have that power immediately? Or do they only have the power when you're declared incompetent? It makes a difference. Can they make medical decisions for you? Can they pick the doctor? Do you want to be an organ donor or not? What about end-of-life decisions? What about pain management? What about feeding tubes or nutrition or hydration? Do they get to pick the doctor? Do they get to pick the hospital? Can they pick an experimental medication? Can they deal with the funeral home? Do you understand? Can they keep people out who maybe aren't good for you? Do they have the authority to go get your confidential medical records? Are they able to share those records with another doctor? Can they pick a specialist? Can they deal with autopsies? Because sometimes those have to be done. All of that kind of stuff. Powers of attorney for healthcare are extremely important. Now, I'm going to tell you something that's my personal opinion, but I think it's a good opinion. Most times when people think of advanced healthcare directives, they think about, well, who can pull the plug? I want you to rethink that. The plug doesn't get pulled that often. What happens a lot more is, do we plug the plug in the first place? It's not, do I get unplugged from the ventilator? It's, do I ever want a ventilator in the first place? So does that advanced healthcare directive give somebody that you love the authority to say, don't do anything? I don't want mom or dad or my spouse or whatever to have anything. Now, some of you are saying, Bob, well, when it gets that bad, we have the new suicide law in California. And no, you don't. You can't use the advanced healthcare directive to do that. You have to be competent and you have to be able to administer the medication to yourself. You cannot use the assisted dying thing that everybody thinks we now have in California. You can't use an advanced healthcare directive to do that. So those two documents are at the core of everything. The durable power of attorney for property or finance or things and the advanced healthcare directive. Now, there are some other documents that are part of a basic plan. A will. Not everybody needs a trust. For some people, especially people that only have bank accounts and don't have any real estate, they may be able to get by perfectly well with just a will, because you can set up bank accounts and brokerage accounts to pass by beneficiary and they won't go through probate. So not everybody needs a trust. in my opinion, everybody needs a will so that at least somebody knows who was supposed to get stuff. Just in case, just in case, just in case. Now, some people probably should also have a trust because they have a larger estate. It's probatable. They may have real estate. They may have things that would kick off probate. Maybe they have a blended family and you know, they don't want fights or whatever. I don't know. But some people need trusts. There are two basic kinds of trusts. Revocable, which means it's changeable, and irrevocable, which for the most part means it's not changeable. Now, some irrevocable trusts can be changed, but I don't want to go into that because this is not a legal show. But there are two basic kinds of trusts, revocable and irrevocable, and both of them are used in estate planning. They're not uncommon. They're not new. You'll hear revocable living trusts, sometimes just called living trusts, sometimes called inter vivos trusts or vivos trusts. They're changeable. They're amendable. You can alter it. An irrevocable trust, which is also can be a valuable tool, in many cases cannot. In some cases it can be, but in most cases it cannot be changed. But both of them are valid tools that you may or may not want to use in your plan so that as you lose independence, somebody's going to be able to manage your affairs. So those are some of the things that need to be in place. Another one that's really common now and is really important is a HIPAA authorization. Bob, what is HIPAA? No, it's not a big animal in the Nile. HIPAA stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, which if my memory serves, and I'm old, my memory is going, it was passed in 2003 and implemented in 2007. HIPAA simply is who has access. That's all the confidentiality language. It's who has access to your confidential medical and or financial records. Some powers of attorney do not have HIPAA language in them, especially if they're older. And if you don't think HIPAA's real, if you're married, call up your spouse's pension and ask them how much is in it. Or call up their IRA company and ask them how much is in it. HIPAA is real. Now, HIPAA can be included in those documents. It's also a standalone document. I'll give you an example from my own life. My wife and I have powers of attorney for healthcare. We've named each other as the person who can make decisions with our children as alternates. But on our HIPAA authorization, not only are we named, but our children are named. So that if they're out of state or out of the country and they want to call the hospital and find out how dad's doing or how mom's doing, the hospital will talk to them. I think that's an important document because sometimes, I'll use my own life. I want my wife to be able to make decisions and know, but I also want my children to be able to call the hospital and find out who I am, how I'm doing. I've used my mother as an example. My mother died last year, but my brother and I were on her HIPAA authorization, but so was some grandchildren because they lived closer to her and took her to the doctor. So my brother and I could make the decisions, but there were some grandchildren who could actually take her to the doctor and get information from the doctor or go pick up her prescription or those kinds of things. So a HIPAA authorization or having HIPAA-compliant documents is really, really, really important. Let's talk about care contracts. Care contracts can be really important, especially in veterans' benefits and in protection from being accused of elder abuse. Notice I haven't talked a lot about what should be in the documents because that's going to vary, and I don't want to say something that might apply to one person and not another person. I'm talking about documents in general. But a care contract is really, really, really important. Let me tell you a place where it's really important. Mom is living independently. But mom can't live independently anymore, and mom gets $1,000 a month from Social Security. Mom can't live independently anymore, so she moves in with the daughter. And they have an agreement, and they have a nice little mother-in-law complex in the back, and mom has her own bedroom and has her own bathroom, and she comes out and shares meals and that kind of stuff. And everybody's happy to have mom there, so because we know mom can't be independent anymore, and so her daughter's taking care of her. Or her granddaughter. Make up a scenario, folks. I'm just using this one. So mom gives her daughter the $1,000 every month. In exchange for that, she gets to live there. She gets utilities paid. She's got her own phone line, all that kind of stuff. We're going to make this simple. And every month, mom gives the daughter $1,000, and it's working out well for everybody. The daughter takes her to the doctor, takes her to the grocery store. Everybody's happy. Mom begins to become more and more incapacitated and incompetent. She develops some dementia, and all of a sudden, she can't do it. So the daughter continues to give herself the $1,000 because that's what they'd agreed to, and everybody's happy. Except one day, a bank employee notices that the daughter's writing checks every month out of mom's bank account to herself. Because banks are mandated reporters. And if you don't think this happens, folks, talk to me or talk to any elder law attorney. And all of a sudden, one day, there's a knock at the door. And there's a nice man there, maybe a police officer, maybe somebody in plain. And they're going, is Mildred Smith here? Well, yeah, that's my mom. We'd like to talk to Mildred. Well, she's in the back room. Let me take you to her. No, we would like to talk to Mildred. Could you ask Mildred to come up here? And they've shown identification. They're from Adult Protective Services or the sheriff. We'd like to go talk to Mildred, and we want to talk to Mildred without you being there. And okay. So they go back and they talk to Mildred and they say, Mildred, how are you? I'm fine. When were you born? I don't remember. Where's your husband? He's in the other room. Her husband's been deceased for 5 years. Or whatever. It becomes plain to them that Mildred is not competent anymore. So they say to her, Mildred, we understand you're paying your daughter every month $1,000 to take care of you. Is that okay with you? Now, if you're lucky, Mildred says, of course. She's still got enough. If you're unlucky, Mildred says, I don't have a daughter. My daughter lives in Iowa. Or worse, I never told my daughter she could take my money. The daughter has a problem. A care contract makes that problem go away. It makes that problem go away. And what it is the contract that when mom was still competent, that she, an agreement that she and mom entered into that said, in exchange for this and this and this, taking care of mom, providing food, shelter, you know, all that kind of utilities, transportation, all of that good stuff. Everything except actual medical care, that mom agreed to pay the daughter $1,000. Now when mom becomes incompetent and somebody comes to the door, the daughter has a contract that they entered into 2 years ago that says it's okay with mom if the daughter gets paid $1,000 or whatever the number is. Don't get hung up on the numbers. Listen to the concept. A care contract can be a very, 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 very important document. Making sure another part of any estate plan, again, care contracts, I cannot emphasize. And when it comes to VA planning and obtaining VA benefits, care contracts can become one of the most important things you will ever do. Speaking of the VA, another important part of any estate plan is if mom or dad are vets, make them go find dad's or mom's or whoever it is, discharge papers. Get their VA stuff and make sure you put it in a safe place where everybody knows where it is. Because if you ever go to apply for VA benefits for dad or for mom, you're going to need those documents. It also, in today's world, is not a bad idea to have the veteran make sure that they know where they are, too. Because sometimes when people get, and at the very least, children, I would make copies of those, because sometimes what happens with the veteran or the veteran spouse is they do a house cleaning one day, and they don't realize that they've thrown them away. And some of the repositories of veterans benefits have actually burned, of veterans documents have burned, and sometimes they're hard to get. So another part of any estate plan, in my mind, if a parent is a veteran or the spouse of a veteran, you need to make sure you've identified where the veterans benefits, where the discharge papers are for the veteran. They're very, very important documents. Another part of any estate plan, and this is not a formal document, but it's equally as important as anything I've mentioned, maybe more so in some cases, which is if you have all that stuff, make sure the people you've chosen to manage you as you lose independence know where it is. I cannot tell you how many phone calls I get every year. Mom died. Do you know where her bank account was? Do you know where her trust was? Do you know where her powers of attorney are? Mom had a stroke and we can't find them. No, I don't know where they are. Make sure you tell the people that are going to be responsible for your life where your life is. Where are the trust or wills or powers of attorney? Well, they're in the safety deposit box. Oh, yeah? Can your kids get into your safety deposit box? Do they even know where your safety deposit box is? What if they need the advanced healthcare directive on Sunday? The bank is closed, or at midnight when you have the heart attack. I'm a big fan of part of an estate plan. If you trust them, make sure that the people that are going to take care of you have copies of everything. I think it's also important that the people that are going to take care of you as you lose independence know where your bank accounts are. If you don't want to give them the bank numbers and the amounts, at least say to your kids, we've got a bank account at Shifting Sands Mutual. We've got another one at Space Cadets Credit Union. Let them know at least where you have accounts. It's important. I mean, it's really important. They need to know where things are. You need to know where things are. Sometimes one spouse can't tell me where the stuff is. So an estate plan begins with, there's other things like deeds. There may be community property agreements or community property transmutation agreements. There may be other things associated with all of this, okay? But I'm telling you, as a core, any kind of a basic plan so that someone can take care of you as you become less independent, as you become more dependent, begins with all of those things. And if you don't have all of those things, then you should, and you need to. Because somebody may need to get their hands on it in a hurry and make sure that you're taken care of and that you're provided for. If you're not sure, come in and see me. We'll sit down and we'll talk together. If I can't figure it out, I can get you to people who are smarter than I am sometimes. But if you're not sure what you have and you're not sure how it works, you need to know how it works. You need to understand how your documents work. You need to understand the limitations of what you have. You need to understand what the shortcomings are or how they work. And those around you who are going to be taking care of you need to understand that. So if you're not sure, come in. We'll sit down together. We'll talk. We'll figure out where you are. And we'll take a look and we'll see if I can help. In a lot of cases, I can help. And when I can't, I can get you to people who can. That's the basis of every estate plan, every long-term care plan, every keeping my independence plan. Remember, when people come in and say to me, Bob, I need to get so-and-so's in a nursing home. What about Medi-Cal? Well, here's my answer. I can do Medi-Cal, but I don't know if I can do Medi-Cal. Well, Bob, that makes no sense. I know I have the knowledge to do that. Does somebody in the family have the permission to do and the ability to do the things that I need to have done? So anything that to do with your estate plan must not only deal with dying, it must also deal with the issues of loss of independence. It's so important. There's not a number big enough for me to tell you how important it is on a scale of 1 to 10. Because after Dad has had the stroke, it's too late to go do it. After Mom has dementia, it's too late to go do it. After Dad is completely lost his independence and is completely dependent, maybe too late to do it. 800-999-8007. 800-999-8007 or assetsandaging.com. Thanks so much for being here. Check out my website. Listen to the podcast and the archived radio shows. Call me. Send me an email. Get to a workshop. But find out how you're going to stay independent and make sure you have a plan to do so. For Assets and Aging, this is Bob Scrivano. I'll see you all again here next week. Bye-bye.